Welcome to episode 3 of The Conversation, as myself, Alexis Nunes, and Shaka Hislop are joined by Stephen Levy-Cruz, whose organization AFJA won the 2019 MLS Humanitarian of the Year Award for their efforts on the grassroots level of football.
Well, welcome everyone in. Alexis Nunes here alongside one of my regular partners in crime, Shaka Hislop. And we have a very special guest and someone that I think plays such an integral part in exactly what we're trying to achieve with this kind of a conversation and with this kind of a talk, I suppose. And it is Stephen Levy. Stephen is a good friend of ours that we've known for a few years now. He's my fellow Salvadoreño as well, as you guys may know. I'm Jamaican Salvadoreña too. And Stephen, you know, you just absolutely had an amazing organization, nonprofit organization, we must say, AFJA, that really helps a lot of the, I want to say, impoverished communities going on in El Salvador, but as well Central America, and helps to reach them through football, through sports, which is, as Shaka has said so many times as well in recently in his pieces with Show Racism, The Red Card, that sports, even though a lot of people, when it comes to talking about social justice and whatnot, believe that certain people should stick to sports, and by certain people, I mean us. And as Shaka has said many times, that sport is really such an important part in reaching people and using our platforms to create, you know, more opportunities as well as to hopefully achieve the social justice that so many of us have been dying for. So Stephen, absolutely welcome to the show. We're definitely happy to have you. And I suppose just quick info for everyone that's probably wondering how you got this cool crew of people together. It is something that we have been talking about for a while, in the sense that with the Black Lives Matter movement, me, someone who is a part of both the Black community and the Latino community, I have been approached by a ton of Latinos, Stephen, as you can probably attest to, and they almost have been wondering what role can they play? Because the thing is, both communities have felt oppression, both communities have felt the negative effects of racism. And sometimes now that we have seen a lot of the attention on the Black community, a lot of Latinos and Afro-Latinos are wondering what they can do, you know? So that is the conversation we kind of want to have today, Stephen. Let's first of all start off by telling us a bit more about yourself and exactly what, you know, you have been trying to achieve with AFJA.
No, well, first of all, thank you both for the time. I know it's been probably 2 years since we got to meet out here in LA and share some pupusas together, just on Wilshire before we all found ourselves making Zoom calls and transitioning to remote world. But thank you for welcoming me into this platform, into the conversation. And I think, you know, starting off with who we are and who I am the president, as you said, of AFJA, an organization based here in Los Angeles that dedicates itself to collecting new and gently used youth soccer equipment for the purpose of establishing cost-free soccer academies in El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and with aspirations to really hit impoverished communities throughout North America and the world, really. And it's really just focusing on using sports and soccer as a vehicle for social change.
And Shaq, I know that you definitely met Stephen too, like you said, 2 years ago, and you were definitely taken aback by him. And one of the reasons why we did want to bring him involved and still have you involved in this chat too is because for all the campaigning as well that you have been doing, you know, for Black Lives Matter and Show Racism, The Red Card, is that the point that we keep having to drive forward is that this is not just to say that Black lives are the only thing that matters. It really is everybody. We just want equality, and that's one of the reasons, Shaka, that you wanted us to involve the Latino community, right?
Absolutely. I think what you've seen over the last couple of months, you've come to recognize the interconnection between what are essentially human rights. Right now we're talking about Black lives and the rights of equality around Black lives, and in particular in this moment at the hands of law enforcement. But you also recognize how the uplifting of Black lives uplifts all those other aspects of our humanity which have been trampled on and have been devalued. Our women, our LGBTQ community, our immigrants, our asylum seekers. Everybody benefits by this rising tide. And as much as right now the focus is on Black lives, it's an effort for equality across the board. And that being said, which is why I was so excited to have Stephen on today, just getting to know Stephen and AFJA and the work that he continues to do, I wanted to know, or I'd like you to explain how you're using sport to uplift those lives in communities that you know only too well from your own time in El Salvador. Why it's important to you? How did you first get involved?
You know, I was born here in Los Angeles, and first of all, born with an immense amount of privilege in comparison to my own family members and people that come from El Salvador. And even though I was born here, I still experience the disparities that exist between people that immigrate to this country, like my mother and father, in search of a better life for their family and for just themselves, just a higher quality of life. And it was the experiences that I witnessed as a child, you know, traveling back to El Salvador, to my grandmother's house in the rural countryside, and playing the beautiful game and just having fun with kids that looked just like me and were the same age, that really inspired what would become AFJA. And it's really just those experiences from my upbringing that fueled this drive to establish something that used the world's game, something that you can go to any continent, really. I even think even in Antarctica, they're playing football, you know? And it's like, you can really go to any continent in on our planet and somebody's playing this game. And it doesn't matter what language you speak. It doesn't matter where you come from, you can connect with somebody through the game. And the power of this game to unite people is really something that is instrumental in the work that we do. And it has its pros and cons. You know, it has a real power to unite and organize people. I would hope that it's mostly for good, but we do see these groups in Italy, in Europe, and not just in Europe, actually, in MLS, you know, here in the US, that are organizing in a negative way, you know, to continue mm-hmm. to promote white supremacy or neo-Nazism and things like that, and screaming absurdities at Black players just because of the color of their skin.
And I think one of the things, too, that we do want to answers. I'm sure that there will be people watching this and probably wondering why there may be, you know, Black people from the Black community wondering, say, why are we bringing in like Latinos in this kind of fight? Or Latinos might be wondering as well, how do the two communities merge? And I think that's the whole point that we want to draw the two parallels, the fact that both communities have experienced a lot more similarities than they probably have differences. And Stephen, as someone, like you said, I mean, my mom is Salvadoreña. She left El Salvador, moved to Jamaica, married my father, of course, had me. So she luckily never had to experience probably some of what your parents may have experienced in the United States as immigrants. You know, in Jamaica, we have a motto that says out of many, one people. And that is true. Out of many, we are one. And because of history, you know, you've got a lot of Chinese, a lot of Indians. You've got, of course, got those of African descent and whatnot. But to the United States, I suppose, it was different. So what was that experience like for your family and probably for you, that I realized that a lot of second generation Latinos or probably people who are Latino but born in the United States, a lot of people constantly go, where are you from? And they say, well, I'm from here. I was born here. And they go, no, where are you really from? So what were some of your experiences? Because I think by you telling them, it would let a lot of people from the Black community realize, whoa, that actually is we can share in those experiences too.
Yeah. You know, you said it's parallels, right? It's like we're really on different roads that have been segmented, even though there are really intersections where we meet and there are issues that affect both of our communities and just affect us as people. And all of us are victimized because of the structures that we're operating under. And those intersections are often overlooked in an effort to divide us. And if it were highlighted about those issues, you know, the those issues that exist on that intersection between the Black community, the Latinx community, I think this movement would be a lot more amplified. But the emphasis on dividing us is so high. You know, you see street vendors being harassed by members of the Black community, being those images being amplified in an effort to divide our communities. And it's very surgical. It's very, very much, it's always about dividing us, as opposed to amplifying the unification between the two communities.
And Stephen, just, you know, the Latinx community is a very diverse one, both here in the US and throughout Central America. But how has events over recent months and this focus on the Black Lives Matter movement, how has that impacted your communities specifically?
I think specifically with the Central American community, with the Salvadoran community, we have a very big population here in Los Angeles. And with the murder of George Floyd, it was, again, a divide between, even within the Latino community, for those that wanted to use that opportunity to, you know, be witness to what was happening and join the Black community in breaking down these structures and really calling attention and using our voice to call attention to the issues that are affecting our neighbors. You know, we live on the same block. We live in the same city here in Los Angeles. And on the other side of the coin, it was the Latino community that's using this time to say, what about us? You know, what about our issues? When in reality, it's all lives matter when Black lives matter, really. And how can we use this moment to bring attention to the issues that we have been fighting against for centuries, as well as join the Black community in the issues that are affecting specifically the Black community?
And I think another thing too, that you could probably tell me your experience as well in it, because again, being an American and of course being a member of the Latino community, you probably are a lot closer to it. But I noticed that there has been a lot of, I want to say confusion for a lot of people who identify as Afro-Latino. Because there are, I mean, say people that look like me, or sometimes even Shaka as well, because you know that, say, people from Ecuador, Dominican Republic, Cuba as well, Puerto Rico, there is more of, you know, a Black ethnicity there. And there's more of a mix. And I felt like a lot of them, some people actually turned to me and they said, well, how do you feel? Some people said, well, you're technically Latino, right? You're not really Black. And I feel like that sometimes that is where the confusion starts, because again, we're not trying to say, well, I am more important, or I should only stand up now because I identify more as Black and not Latino. It is literally that there are people that are both and almost have this identity crisis that's come from this movement that we're seeing now, Stephen. So how have you seen it? Or if you've heard, you know, of anybody from the Afro-Latino community that may be confused right now?
I think for me as a light complected Latino, you know, it's been a time of reflection and acknowledgement of my own privilege. Even though I live under the same structures and have been othered or have been traditionally segmented away from the white community or the affluent white community or things like that, it's a time to acknowledge the privilege that I live under as well, you know, and how that colorism is deeply ingrained into the my Latino community, my Latinx community, specifically Central American. You know, we have Honduras, Nicaragua, Panama, Belize. These are all Central American people as well. But when you think, or when folks speak about Central America, they think of people that look like myself, you know, with a lighter complexion. Mm-hmm. The Garifuna population in Central America has historically been overlooked and just erased, really. It's erasure of Black people, even within the Latino community. I think for myself, it's also been an opportunity to educate elders within my own family. So that when they see players kneeling, or when they see players and coaches, you know, holding arms and embracing each other to support each other during this time, or when there's a stop to sports, like we had here in the US, when all sports really just shut down, and people were mad about that. And it's like, it's a moment to have that conversation, use those 2 hours that, or those 90 minutes that we would be watching a game, to have that conversation with mom and dad about, you know, colorism within our community. Why is it that a darker complected person in our community is often overlooked or just wanted to be casted away?
And let me ask, Stephen, why is that? Because, and I ask that as directly as I do, because we have a lot of those same issues in the Caribbean ourselves. And with our own history of colonialism and how that maybe is now translated to colorism in this century, why do you think we are still having those conversations in our own communities?
Yeah, I think it's really, like you said, you hit the nail on the head. It's really, we are products of colonialism, the West Indies, right? All from the south of the border all the way down, even in the United States, we are all products of colonialism. And these ideas of colorism and casting away people from a lower class or a different shade of skin is coming from those times when, you know, countries like Spain and England and all these European countries were really just colonial, just dominating and establishing these practices of separating us. And, you know, it comes from the Spanish speaking community or the Latin community, Spain. You know, it has its history with Morocco, you know, and how people, even within Spain, you have the separation between those that are in Madrid versus those that are in Barcelona. And it's always about dividing. If it's not language, it's the shade of your skin. And all those things have been transferred to us. And it's really generational trauma that we're dealing with today. You know, it's things that have been institutionalized into our culture, and we continue to uphold these things that are our own demise, all for the benefit of those who believe in white supremacy.
And that's true. As we were saying that, it's funny how both communities literally have such similar past. I don't even want to say similar, the same past, as, you know, Stephen just said, we are all products of colonialism. And that's why it's one of the things, Stephen, that I suppose now we do realize how important it is to just get everybody on board. I mean, the fact that you are still also, we are still also asking for white people to be a part of this fight too, and realizing just how much of an integral role they will play if we are ever to rid ourselves of racism in this world. But that's one of the things too, that we start asking how. And I mean, because we have to try to overturn centuries of oppression and centuries of being conditioned to realize that anybody of Stephen's complexion, straight darker, is not what it's supposed to be. It's not the ideal race, so to speak. And that is where, as Shaka has said, sports comes in. Shaka, I mean, you said it brilliantly and brought it just on one of our shows recently about the fact that how it is really baffling when a lot of people turn to athletes or other members of the sporting community, like say us, and say, you know, shut up and dribble, basically, or just stick to sports. Because you really feel like right now is the time to reach people through sports, and we can probably only do it through these kind of things like sports, right?
Yeah, I think sports is a perfect vehicle to get these messages across. And I'll use myself as an example. When I was playing at Newcastle United, I was sitting in a dressing room that I was 5 feet away from Faustino Asprilla from Colombia. I was 5 feet away from Philippe Albert of Belgium. Steve Howey, who is from the northeast of England, representing Newcastle. Rob Lee, who's from London, the south of England, playing up in the northeast. And every weekend, every Saturday, we went out into the field with a shared responsibility, to get the best out of each other. When I wasn't having a bad day, I knew I could count on any one of those to carry my own burdens. And when I was having a good day, I knew I had to maybe be there for somebody else. And where else can you get that kind of a life lesson? That, you know, we are essentially our brother's keepers. And during the course of the week, depending on the result, those things that didn't go well, we worked on making them better. And those things that did, we use as a foundation to make each of us better. And I felt that gave us an insight, that gave us an outlook in a way that I don't think you get in many other circumstances. It also speaks to, as athletes, a duality of our existence. Mm-hmm. Where just as I was starting Sharice on the red card, I was outside a gas station in Newcastle, and three young white men come walking down the hill shouting racist abuse at me. As they get to about 25 yards away, they recognize who I am, start singing my name and asking for autographs. I politely declined. But it spoke to my duality. From 100 yards away, I was a black man worthy of only the most racist, demeaning diatribe you could hear. From 25 yards away, I was a person worthy to be lauded, to have his name sang. And that spoke to who I was, my existence at the time, and the platform that I had to get that message across. And here we are 25 years later, sure, recently Red Card as an organization is the UK's leading education anti-racism charity. But we're still having many of the same conversations. We are seeing that spill out into the streets of Kentucky, the streets of Minneapolis. We are seeing the effects of colonialism and colorism being played out at the borders where children are stripped from their parents. We are seeing so many of these issues. And I took a note. I took a note of what Steve just said, institutional traumas, which I think is such a powerful phrase of what our communities continue to experience here in the United States, in England, across Europe, but also plays out in our own communities, in our own home countries. And we have to use the platforms that we have available to us. Me as an ex-player, Stephen as a player who, and I'll use his words, born into the privilege of being an American citizen. How can he now go back and give him what he's learned, his own experiences in LA here in the US, have an impact in El Salvador and throughout Central America? These are the issues that we are now confronted with and have to be prepared to challenge. If we are to deliver on a promise that we make to our own kids to give them a better world to live in.
And I mean, Stephen, just to touch on that, because we hear of Shaka's experiences and it's amazing the amount of footballers. I mean, I have my own experiences too, but I also speak to a lot of footballers and they echo such similar experiences to just being as a person here as well in England, just seeing the way in which the media portrays, say, black footballers in comparison to the whites. I mean, I'll give you a prime example, Raheem Sterling. I mean, he's born in Jamaica. Of course, he plays for England, but so many times if he scores a goal, it's always England international Raheem Sterling. But then when they found out his tattoo, the gun tattoo, it says Jamaican born Raheem Sterling dons dangerous gun tattoo. And, you know, that's something that, again, is not just something that black players or the black community has to deal with, Stephen. So from you, I know, of course, the fact that you've been using sports and you have had a lot of interactions with actual footballers there, Latino footballers, and we talk about representation. How have you personally just found it as a Latino member?
You know, I think for us, it's really a moment to use our platform to voice our position in how we're not going to take this anymore, how we're not going to be quiet about it and either shut up and play or just go to work or you know, I apart from being a nonprofit president of a nonprofit organization, I work in the healthcare field. And and one of the things I paid attention really closely to that happened just last week was a black woman named Dawn Wooten, who brought attention to the sterilization that was happening in detention centers of black and brown women that are being held in these detention centers. And it was a black woman that brought attention to this issue that is supposedly just affecting the Latino community. And it's, how do you use any soapbox or any megaphone that you have to stand up and voice your position in this? You know, there's a very hard line drawn on the ground right now, and there's no more of this kind of flip-flopping between sides. You need to either be on one side of this or the other. And it's not a time to, you know, just shut up and play or just worry about your nonprofit. There's something, a moment that is happening right now that is time to witness and really just unify behind the bringing down these structures that are just working against us all.
I'd also like to add here, and Stephen alluded to it earlier again, we have to challenge media's portrayal on so many of these issues. Stephen spoke about, let's say, black youths confronting Latino vendors and how that is replayed in the media to send a message, a message that is meant to divide. Again, incredibly powerful language Stephen uses. It's surgical in how it's used and employed. Things like black on black crime are another popular phrases used in the media that only serve to further criminalize a community. And I say that if you're white, white murders or murders of white people here in the US, 85% of them are committed by other white people. Yet we never hear of white on white crime in the media. Black on black crime, you can hear repeated daily, depending on where you go to for your news source. So we also have to challenge how the media reports and reflects on our own communities, how damaging they are, and how they misrepresent the stories of our communities and a lot of the good work that's going on in our communities to those who employ other communities, and how that continues to drive a wedge between us all.
And then one of the ways that I suppose we have all agreed is the best way to just challenge this and just challenge social injustice on a whole is through sports. And I mean, Shaka Stephen just literally spoke of his almost, you know, the duality of who he is in the eyes of other people as he was as football player here in England. And I spoke about it with Raheem Sterling. I mean, Shaka recently spoke to Weston McKennie as well, who's now at Juventus. And he had something interesting, Shaka, to you to say something along the lines of the fact that, you know, Monday to Friday, he's just regular black kid, you know, but on the weekends, that's when he becomes an athlete. You know, it's almost like Clark Kent to Superman, because in the eyes of, say, the fans there, and especially now probably the fans in Italy that we know that has a history of racism there too. And that is the duality of it. So Stephen, you know the platform that, you know, athletes have, and you probably know the power of sports. So why is it that you chose to go through the sports avenue to do what you're doing and achieve what you're doing, as opposed to, say, just start a regular charity that would still be able to probably feed and educate some of the kids that you have been doing?
I think, you know, the friendship that Shaka and I have developed, for example, is prime example why we've selected specifically soccer, specifically football, as the vehicle for our platform and for our program. It has a remarkable ability to connect people. And, you know, it could connect people that have ill intentions, or it can connect people that want to do good in the world. You know, like I touched in the beginning of this, there are literal neo-Nazi groups, literal white supremacist groups in supporter groups across football around the world, in MLS, you know, and in Europe. You see these very organized groups that supposedly are just there to cheer for the team. But when the opposing team scores and it's Mario Balotelli, for example, you hear all these racial slurs and you hear all these things. And it's just now that that's being amplified, but it's not that it's just now happening. It's just that it's now being captured. And it's, how do you use that same level of organization for good? How can you use this sport that so many people around the world just are glued to? You know, the World Cup is such a huge platform. Imagine that using, hopefully, when the World Cup comes around again, people are still talking about Black Lives Matter. People, the patches are still on the jerseys. They're still kneeling before the game to continue this conversation. And just continue that. That's so important to just not give up the conversation, not lose the momentum that we have right now.
And then I suppose now, just before we start closing and whatnot, with everything that you're doing, what do you want? I almost want to say what the end goal is, but I think we all definitely have the same end goal. But what steps do you want to see, and what kind of parts do you want to see the Latino community play in this kind of a fight?
Really, one of our main objectives, a lot of people think that we're just interested in developing youth soccer players to go into the professional world and play. But even professional soccer players that we bring to speak to the kids through Zoom calls like this in today's world, tell our youth the importance of educating themselves and the importance of finding those intersections between themselves and their fellow academy mates in Honduras or their fellow academy mates in Guatemala, and what we hope will be in Trinidad and Tobago with AFCHA's, you know, future aspirations to connect across the Caribbean and into other parts of Central America. And it's really just, how do you use this sport to inspire youth to be the future leaders of their community? It's not so much about developing just soccer players. It's about developing citizens and developing the people that are going to go on, receive education, professional training, become just doctors, teachers, sports broadcasters and go back to their communities to be the change that we all wish to see in our world.
And Stephen, just in addressing that, and you'll have to excuse my ignorance here, but how do members of the Black community, such as myself, who don't speak Spanish, and as much as I understand the focus right now and over recent months has been and will be around Black lives and the equality, recognizing of the equality of Black lives, how do we also support that call and that push for unity within the Latinx community? Because, and again, excuse my ignorance here, it's sometimes a little bit intimidating for somebody like me, because I don't speak Spanish. So it's how do I get involved? How can I help? How can I be a part of that solution as well?
You know, Shaka, one of the things that I spoke of a little bit a while ago is, for example, the crisis at the border and immigration reform. And one of the things that is not often portrayed is that immigration is a Black issue as well. There are Haitian, there are African immigrants currently detained in the same detention centers with Salvadorans, Hondurans, Guatemalans, Mexicans. We're going through a moment right now where we are intentionally being divided, but that's really not the case. What the Black community could do, I think, is recognize that the same issues that Latino and Latinx communities are fighting for are also affecting Black members of the community. Mm-hmm. And you know, and it's kind of that duality. You know, it's that intersection is recognizing organizations like Raices Texas, an organization that provides legal aid to people going through detention centers and immigration proceedings. Border Angels in San Diego, who literally hikes the same immigration trails in the deserts of San Diego, Arizona, and southwestern United States, putting water canteens for the people that are just dying of thirst. And there's real organizations that need help. And if the Black community could find that duality and understand that, like I said, there are Black immigrants in these detention centers side by side with people of the Latinx community, then we start to amplify both causes.
Perfect. Well, Stephen, I mean, we have to thank you so much. You know, we already definitely celebrate everything you do and continue to do. And I hope that just talks like these just help both communities, of course, both communities that gave me life that, you know, I hold dear, just bring us together and realize, you know, the same thing that Shaka and I keep preaching, that this is not, you know, an only Black lives issue. This is not a political issue. This is a human rights issue that really and truly affects us all. It doesn't matter if you're Black, purple, pink, brown, yellow, it affects us all. And at some point, we all have to stand up together in order to actually win or get a victory against this fight that really and truly has been going on since the beginning of time. But Stephen, thank you so much for joining us. Shaka, as always, you know, you're my bro. And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll definitely be having a lot more of these conversations to see how we can truly just bring all communities together as we continue this fight against, you know, social injustice and racism.
Next week on Friday, we're joined by Leon Mann, the agent of former Manchester City midfielder Yaya Toure and a current founding member of the Football Blacklist. Trust me, you're not going to want to miss this one. See you then.